Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Today, we continue our conversation with Peeyush Patel and jump right back in where we left off.
I would love to spend more time talking about all of the cultural lessons and cars and everything that you learned during your time at Digital Tutors. This is about generational wealth. So is it okay if we just direct listeners to some of the other resources you have in that arena?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I got to tell you, you spoke about the importance of just strategic thinking and knowing where you're going, what you're doing. Did you know when you kind of got knee deep in Digital Tutor, did you know you were growing a firm toward a liquidity event? Did it feel like that at all?
No. And I'll be honest with you, I hate investing in companies who have one goal, and that is a liquidity event.
Yeah.
Because what happens is the customer now becomes the acquirer, right? And so if all we're worried about is somebody's going to buy us, we don't really care about selling a product today or providing a service today. All we care about is making sure we have the numbers to have a liquidity event. And when you don't have a liquidity event, after a while, desperation sets in and you start having a fire sale. I never approached that we would ever be acquired. But what I did approach it was, what if something was to happen to me, right?
You're right.
My wife can't run this. Mind you, she's my partner in this, but she doesn't know the technical side.
Right.
My kid's way too young. So what would we do? Like, what's their exit? And so I ran the business like I was going to sell it, mainly so she could sell it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And we got the phone call because we were disruptive in the market. And I think that is how you get the greatest value for any organization, is you become disruptive to the next player.
So the company that ultimately acquired Digital Tutor was Pluralsight.
That's right.
Did you know anything about this firm, or were you working toward them, or was it just a...
No, they came out of the blue.
Wow.
They were, you know, a few years old, and they had a strategy of rolling up a bunch of companies and going public, and their strategy worked, right? And they accomplished what they set out to do. But we were one of the big players in the space. And so it made likely sense, either we buy them or they buy us, but there's going to be an 800-pound gorilla.
You know, all the different fingers that flow into a transaction the size of yours, and you sold a Pluralsight for $45 million, and we're not disclosing any confidential information here. It's been in the paper. You've discussed it openly. There's so many different avenues that feed into that. You talk about just the financial implications, professional, legal. We would like to make that in and of itself its own episode, if you don't mind.
Oh, you talk about a fun roller coaster of emotions, just, you know, in that process alone. You bet. Happy to come back and talk all about that.
Great.
So on that roller coaster of emotion, you just go from having most of your wealth in a privately held company to then getting an email that says wire complete. And now you have all of that wealth in your checking account. If you were mentoring a entrepreneur who had that experience, what would you tell them to do next?
Easy to do now that I can look back. We were a very culture-first organization, and selling the company, it was a really hard decision, right? Like, do we do this? Do we keep riding this thing out until we die? And really, I looked at it as, can I sell video online for another 10 years, right? Because to start today, I'd be competing with high school students working in their bedrooms with free software, free equipment, free everything. You know, how long can we continue this? So I looked at it as, you know, here's a chance for us to exit this arena. So in my little mind, right, to smooth this over, we gave 10% of it back to our employees. They're not shareholders. We just decided this was for us partially the right thing to do, but partially I'll just buy my way to your happiness and it'll be okay, right? That day was really hard because my employees looked at me like I sold them like cattle, you know, and they were like, wait a minute, we got on board to go change the world and now you're leaving and these are our new adoptive parents. So that was a really hard, like I was not prepared for that level of emotion.
Yeah, you were not prepared to help someone pay off student loans or a mortgage and have that be the response. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really hard. Listen, if you're homeless and you're worried about your next meal, that's a struggle in itself, right?
Right.
I think the biggest challenge for these folks is, A, surround yourself with really smart advisors, right? Both financial advisors, legal, tax, right? So you have a team. I didn't know much about this team aspect, but I do remember the movie Pretty Woman, right? And Richard Gere had a great team, right?
Right.
His lawyer with him right there, his tax guy right there. So part of me was like, I need a little lawyer and tax guy and financial advisor team, right?
I noticed you very conspicuously left out a key member of the team there that you did not have around you that Richard Gere did as well, and Julia Roberts.
Yeah, well, I already had that. My wife was pretty solid when it comes to that. So yeah, the real challenge is going to be once that money hits, a factor of loneliness will come in that you're never prepared for. And what I mean by that is lots of new strangers show up in your life, right? Lots of people with a handout, right? That if you don't hand them money, they're gonna lose everything and you're the one who's got to save them. And so my advice to somebody who's about to sell their company or has just sold their company is just to take a few months and just not do anything, right? And let all that dust settle. And eventually that's essentially what we did. We just went back to life as normal. Lived in our house and just did our thing and let everything settle.
You almost handle it the same way you handle a traumatic event, it almost sounds like to me. I mean, this is a great event happening in your life.
It is.
To process it and to process it well in your reaction to it, I think you almost have to take the same tactic of don't make any major decisions for a good period of time.
Yeah. I mean, if you generate $45 million of personal wealth, let's say over 10 years,
right.
Well, it's just a slow drip, and you customize yourself and your life around that slow drip. So it's not a shock to the system. But when it happens all of a sudden overnight, a lot of people show up. A lot of phone calls start coming.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard you say you've taken some inspiration from DJ Khaled and Drake.
That's
in that
right.
Sense of just no new friends.
Don't need any new friends, right? My closest friends are still my old closest friends, right? And it's because they don't want anything from me, right?
That.
And so those are the folks that are going to be there with you in the long haul. And I saw that from my parents, right? My parents, the friends and the family that really stuck by them in their toughest times, they're still close to them today.
How much do the ideas of BAM, and then you talked about grow a little bit as well, how do those play into the team that you surround yourself with as far as managing that newfound wealth? Do they play in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to have some headspace with that team, right? To help you understand what's coming up. So GROW stands for, it's how to have conflict resolution. Now, G is for goals. The R is for the reality. And then the options and kind of what will and when is the W. And so I'm a big believer in you're not growing unless you're having uncomfortable conversations. And I need my team to have those uncomfortable conversations with me. So we could intercept a bad decision before it becomes a bad decision.
Well, now that you brought that up, so full disclosure, Peach is my business mentor, and we meet monthly, and one of the first things he says to me, hey, tell me about an uncomfortable conversation you had. And as someone that didn't like conflict when we first started talking, I was like, can we please skip this? It's the first thing every darn time we meet, but it's helped me grow as a leader in ways that I couldn't even imagine. In the talking about uncomfortable conversations, in the realm of generational wealth, what role do you see in an advisor to someone with wealth in their ability and their willingness to have an uncomfortable conversation?
So it's really easy to say, you know, I've got that Midas touch now, right? Mm. I did it once. Why can't I do it 20 more times, right?
Right.
And I think in that whole process, luck gets forgiven. Like we forget, oh, there's a little bit of luck, right place, right time. Market was just perfect.
Timing.
Yeah. We forget all that and go, oh, it's just ability, right? Midas touch. I mean, what else can I touch and become $45 million, right? And you've got to surround yourself with advisors who go, yeah, you know, it doesn't work that way. Let's let this money work, right? Here's some play money, but let's make this money work. I have friends who had similar type of exits events, and you know, they're kind of struggling because they've spent it.
Mm.
And once it's gone, it's gone. And so you need somebody to help you understand the guardrails, especially even in deals like legal deals, right? So investing in other organizations or being part of other organizations, you got a lot more to lose. So yeah, when we come back and talk about the, you know, going through the whole trust process.
Oh yeah.
That was all new to my family. How does this work and what's this about?
Sure.
That you have a bigger target on your back. You got to be aware of that.
And I think a good advisor, what I see at times are people that they want the guy in the investment world, in the advisory world, you're going to like whoever you're working with, because you don't make it in the advisory world if you don't have the ability to connect with people.
That's right.
And have a relationship with them. But where the good advisors that I see are the ones willing to sacrifice the relationship for the good of the advice of the client. And that's right. Exactly what you're talking about, being,
yes.
Because some people won't like someone having an uncomfortable conversation with them.
Yeah. And I think it's really easy to fall back to, as the owner of the organization, I tell people what to do and I don't want to hear no.
Right.
I want you to figure it out.
Yep.
And then when you have an advisor sit you down and say, kind of need you to hear no. It's like, oh, okay. This is a very unusual relationship we have here, right? And I think that's why it's important to find the right fit.
Yep.
Is that it's not a no, it's I'm looking out for you.
Trust. Right?
And trust, and everybody's trying to do the best for each other. I think that's really important.
That's great. Well, the one thing that we don't want to fail to bring up, the one thing in knowing you that I love the absolute most about you is you're a family guy. Yeah. And I love that about you. It's family first. Kind of tell me about your wife, because she's pretty special. I know her too. Tell me about what she's meant to you personally and as a business partner, because she built this. What you didn't build this on your own. She built this with you.
That's right. My wife Lisa and I were eighth grade pen pals, right? So let me just kind of frame this for you. Every day that I was home for the summer or the weekends, my parents would give the housekeepers the day off, because they're like, oh, we've got me and my brother to help them do the rooms, and that's just money we'd save. So they'd get us out there first thing in the morning on a Saturday, making beds and cleaning rooms. And as we made the beds, my mom would say, you love us, right? Yep. I tuck the corner in. You really want to take care of us, right? Yep. Tuck the other corner in. You're not going to marry anybody that's white, right? No, I won't do that, mom. And so that was this mantra every day. Like, we need you to be a good son and do as we tell you. Yeah, I'll do as you tell me. I'm just making these beds like you told me, right? And then we had an eighth grade project where this young lady named Lisa wrote a letter. It was way before email. Wrote a letter to my middle school. There was three sections of English. My section got the assignment to write her back. So I wrote her back. And then she wrote everybody in the class back. And I was really the only one who kept writing back. So I'd get a letter every week and I'd write a letter every week. And this went all the way on till my freshman year of college. And I was talking to her on the phone and I said, I want to come and see you. And I hung up the phone and I looked at my buddy and I said, I'm going to marry this girl. And he goes, you're a crazy person. You haven't even met her. What if you're getting catfished? I was like, I'm not. I'm like, I just know, I don't care who this, and I, mind you, I'd never seen a picture of her. But I was like, this is the girl for me. Like, she knows everything about me for all these years. This is the one for me. And so when my parents are like, okay, this is a, you know, we had a very trying time in that my parents felt, look, we don't want an arranged marriage, but we kind of do. Right? We kind of want to have some influence on this. And this is far from what we all agreed to. But I told my parents, if you really believe in something bigger than yourself, this is about as arranged as it gets. Because I have no business going to Nebraska. She has no business being in Oklahoma City. And we've been married almost 22 years now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And she is my partner in this whole thing. She will never claim she's the financial whiz, but she's my financial whiz.
Oh, yeah.
In that she's so conservative.
Yes.
Right? So it's paying people on time, paying bills on time, never being in debt. You know, you mentioned earlier we had to go a few times without a paycheck. There is a social contract between employer and employee. You're going to provide services for me, and I'm going to pay you on time. The minute I break that contract, everything's in the wind, right?
Right.
So we really made it clear, look, if we have to skip a check, that's okay. We can't skip a check for the social contract that we've created, right? Because we will destroy all the trust with our within our organization.
Wow.
And we don't need to tell anybody we skip checks. We just need to make sure theirs never bounces.
Amazing. Yeah, she's the kind of the yin to your yang, right?
Really is. Like, she's the voice of reason. I call her my voice of reason.
Telling you. She is. And I can tell you just personally, her gift of writing now translates to emails. I love getting an email from her. I feel my day just gets better after I get an email. You're the coldest email person I've ever gotten.
I know everybody's busy, so I'm just going to get to the point and get on with it, right? She has the nurture side of her, right? I mean, in our business, more than making sure people got paid, she was the house mom, right?
Right.
We had a lot of young people work for us and very creative people. And very creative people have very fragile egos, right? And it could be really easy when I say, I don't like that. Oh, God, he hates me. No,
right.
I didn't say I hate you. I just don't like those dots on a computer,
right?
Not you, just those dots. So she, with her background in family relations and child development, really was the person with a couch in her office where you can come in, shut the door, and just talk. And for a lot of young people going through life, she became really like their therapist in the office. And we encourage that.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll ask you a little, and carefully I ask this question about your son, because I'll shift to him a little bit. I know just how cautious you are there of the impact of wealth, dramatic, big wealth on a young person's life, and how that can impact them going farther, whether it's their drive or whatever. Because you really want your name to be a blessing to this young man and not something that's a burden. How have you and Lisa done that?
So we've approached it as he is on this journey on his own, much like I was on a journey on my own. My wife was on her journey on her own. And we're there to help him be some of these guardrails. This makes sense. This doesn't make sense. Right. But ultimately, you need to make that decision. For example, we're big believers in you need to make your own way in life. Years ago, we hired a housekeeper and we told the housekeeper, don't touch his room. You don't need to do anything in that room. And my parents found out, first of all, very judgmentally, you have a housekeeper? Why can't you clean your own house? I'm like, Mom, I'm busy. I got stuff going on. We taught you better than that. And then they asked my son, they're like, hey, Nick, what do you think about the housekeeper cleaning your room? And he goes, Grandpa, Mom and Dad don't let her clean my room. And then all of a sudden that judgment flipped to, what are you, too cheap? You can't clean your son's room? How does this work? And I was like, wait a minute. Let's analyze what you just said here for a second.
Whoa.
I was like, look, this is a poor kid living in a successful man's house. And when he can afford a housekeeper, he's more than happy to have his room cleaned. But until then, he needs to figure it out.
That is awesome.
So, you know, he graduated high school. I said, look, you get a free weekend. Monday, I need you to find a job. Can't find a job on Monday? I'm going to find you one and it's going to suck. So you might want to find your own job. He did. He went out, got a job at Chick-fil-A, started 5 days later.
Wow.
And I was like, look, we're not going to tell you what you can or can't spend your money on. Just know next year you're going to have to spend money on living. So save it up. And he did.
See, I think that's brilliant. I have another friend who's done quite well himself, and I was at their house once, and their son's friend was going, man, Your dad's rich, because he was in their house looking at that. And I heard the mom immediately came up to him and said, no, the son said to us, the friend said to his son, man, you're rich. Wife comes up, nah, he's broke. Now, his dad's done really well.
Yeah.
But this guy's broke as hell. it's just kind of like what you did with your sons. It was fantastic.
That's right.
I feel like most people just sort of have it, not necessarily easy, but you wake up, you go to work, and that's what you model for your children. Were you ready for that dynamic of not having that structure in place for sort of modeling what to do and going to work for your son?
Yeah. Imagine having a freshman in high school son who has some friends over. Actually, he was a ninth grader, had some friends over. And, you know, we're in the movie and video game business, right? So digital tutors train people who make movies and video games. So our house is full of movies and video games. That's just kind of my world. And the kid looks around and he's like, man, what's your mom and dad do? And he goes, I'll just hang out the house all day. And I'm like, hang out the house all day? Are you kidding? Dude, I work 7 days a week. What? And well, what he saw was we sold the company. I exited my role there. And we were in this window of time of like, what do we do now? And he saw that as that's the norm. So immediately, I think 2 days later, we got an office space about a mile away. And I told my wife, I don't care if we go there and watch movies or read books, but we need to model like we go to work, right? We contribute to society until we figure out what the next chapter is. And we need to do this right away. So every day we'd drop him off, we'd leave, pick him up, come back home. And he'd say, what do you do today? And we're like, oh, we were at the office and we worked on this and this and this. And that really reset that boundary back to, okay, my mom and dad just don't hang out the house all day.
So you went on from there. I mean, you did find your path, I can tell you. I mentioned earlier, the last question I'm going to have for you, but I mentioned earlier you were my business mentor. Yeah, and it's been invaluable to me. What do you like about it?
I love watching the growth. I mean, at the end of the day, David, I'm still a teacher at heart, right? So I get the pleasure, not because of COVID, it's kind of paused because of COVID, but I get the pleasure of traveling all over the globe, talking about entrepreneurism, talking about how to build a culture that matters. Ultimately, I get to be a teacher, and I just love that. I love the teachers that I had as a young person probably had the most impact in me because I was surrounded by people who were, you're not good enough, you're not working hard enough, right?
Right.
You're never going to amount to much. And then I had teachers who were like, God, I don't know what it is about you, kid, but one day you're going to do something big. And so I think at the end of the day, if I really reflect way back early on when you asked me that question at the beginning of this podcast about teaching, sure, it was because I didn't want to build missiles, right? But at the end of the day, it was really because I wanted to go be that person for other people. And I got a chance to do that. And as a business coach and mentor, I get to have a direct impact on other people's lives, right? My time with you then impacts this entire firm.
Yeah.
And yeah, their true. Families, right? And potentially your clients. So it has a big ripple effect. And I love doing it.
Wow. And it has.
Peach, there are so many nouns that follow your name. Father, husband, teacher, leader, entrepreneur, soldier, grill master. That is not by any means an exhaustive list. Which ones do you feel most proud of at this point?
I would have to say, husband, I am super proud of. You know, you hear a lot of people who sell their business and then life really changes for them, right? We went through that whole process. You know, my wife immediately had this feeling like, she's like, well, I guess you're going to trade me in for 220s. And I was like, honey, I wouldn't know what to do with 220s. Right? Probably have a heart attack. Not built for that. I was like, you're with me on this journey, right? Yeah. We're sticking through this. And whatever the next chapter holds, we're going to figure this out together. I would say I'm very proud of going totally against the grain, right? She's one of the first Americans in my family. You know, I remember, bless her heart, like we had been married like 2 weeks and my mom took her to an Indian wedding. And I think there was at least 2,000 people there. And she was the only white person. And somebody walked up to my mom and said, nice to see you. Haven't seen you in so long. And they're like, you brought your housekeeper? And my mom goes, no, my daughter-in-law, right? So I'm super proud to be her husband in that we've kind of gone through this journey together. She's the first in her family to go to college. I mean, this is huge, you know, for her family to see, like, this is a young, successful woman that's figured it out, right?
And she's just not white. She's white.
Oh, she's Nebraska white.
Blonde white.
Yeah,
blonde, white. Beautiful girl, blonde yeah. white. That way you didn't bring home just, yeah, there was yeah. a tanned white. You brought home white.
That's right. From the country. And I would say the next one is father. I mean, I'm really, my job as a dad has really started to wane now that my son's off to college. And I now get to see the fruits of the things that we've planted, right? Like, I'm not going to make those decisions for him. And we never did, right? So I'll share a quick story with you. So, and because you may have listeners who are young parents. So he went to a private school, which we moved him at eighth grade. And I thought, you know, I just want him around other nerds, right? So private school should be the way to go. And it's really interesting because the minute we moved him, everything changed, not for the better, for the worse, right? He really struggled. And it's a bell curve. So where he was in the top 10% of the bell curve. You take all those top 10% and you put them in one room, the bell curve has to recreate itself, right? And he found himself on the bottom 10% of the bell curve. And we were just not the squeaky wheel parents. You know, I was like, hey, I'm a teacher. There's two sides to all these stories, right? Your side, the teacher's side, and probably the truth somewhere in the middle. So we made a deal. We dropped him off one day and there's all these bags of food. And I'm like, what's this? They're like, oh, the parents bring food for their kids. So they drop them off and they go get food and then they bring the food back. And then there were all these backpacks. And they're like, oh, these are all the backpacks that people forgot. So I told Nick, every year you get 2 free passes, right? You forget your backpack, I'm going to bring it one time. And I'll bring it one more time. But after that, you're on your own, buddy. And the way I look at it is, what's the worst that can happen in 8th grade? Right?
Yeah.
But if I set this pattern of dad's always going to save the day, what's that going to look like at 26?
Right.
Right. And now I can't fix those things because those mistakes are so much bigger.
Yeah.
I've just got to give you the tools to go make those decisions. And if it's a bad decision, we'll learn from it.
Right.
I can't think of a better place to end in there. We're going to include a link in the show notes for those who want to learn more about your piece, buy your book. But this was truly an honor, and I appreciate it. Look forward to speaking with you again.
You bet. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week.